My name is Elaine Summerfield, and I'm your host for Inspire Indeed, where we're learning about community issues and the amazing nonprofit organizations and community leaders that are working to address them. Today, we'll take some time to get to know one of our local nonprofit leaders. Damon Jiggetts is the executive director of Peter Paul Development Center, which is located in the East End, serving the youth and the residents of that community. We're going to learn a bit about Damon's history, how he got to that role as the executive director, and then spend some more time learning about the difference that Peter Paul is making in the East End. Welcome, Damon.
Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you, and thank you so much for coming in and agreeing to come in, especially when you are a little bit under the weather, I understand. Your voice is a little bit scratchy.
So. A little bit.
So before we get into talking about the details with Peter Paul Development Center, I'm really curious to know a little bit more about you, and I think our listeners would be interested to know a little bit about you as well. How did you start working in the field of nonprofits, and what brought you to focus on youth development for so long?
Okay, well, I started out teaching right out of college, and I enjoyed the classroom, but I also felt a little constrained by being in the classroom in regards to the effect I could have on the children, being governed by a lot of the way the school systems operate and that kind of a thing. And it wasn't until I volunteered at a local Boys and Girls Club that I really got that itch to really work with kids in a different way. And
you always knew you wanted to work with kids, which is what led you into teaching. But
right. Then
you found a different way through your volunteer work, huh?
Yeah, my first job, you know, all the way back to a time when I think I was like 13, I worked for a Parks and Recreation Center back home in Danville, and I ran birthday parties for little kids. You know, so I've always worked with youth, and so you know, when I got the job with the Boys and Girls Clubs, it just really just kind of spun from there.
You're working for a Boys and Girls Club around here?
Right, Boys and Girls Clubs of Metro Richmond.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I started out as a program director in the West End near VCU, off of Harrison, and then I moved over to the Blackwell community as
on
a unit
south
director
side.
On the south side. It was right around the time when they were going through the whole Hope 6 project and revitalizing that community, which was an interesting experience in itself. And then I was moved over to the Bainbridge location as a unit director there, which was one of the larger facilities in Richmond. You know, just my career just kind of took off from there with the Boys and Girls Club, and it was great from a youth development standpoint and really learning kids and understanding how to interact with kids. And so that was the biggest thing that I got out of that.
That's great. And then after the Boys and Girls Clubs, you spent time after the Boys and Girls Clubs with Communities and Schools of Richmond, right?
Right, yeah. Wow, I couldn't have written a better job description for myself when I got wind of that opportunity. And, you know, I was just blessed to really have an opportunity to work with so many great people within that organization, a wonderful mission in regards to just ensuring that kids have the supports they need to stay in school and graduate, and to ensure that students had the resources and that were accessible to them through the schools was great. You know, just starting there with when we were just in 12 schools, and when I left, we were in 32 schools.
Wow.
And so it was a tremendous amount of growth, and I attribute that to the wonderful staff, their commitment to the mission,
mm-hmm.
Their hard work and efforts as well.
And it sounds like a nice blend for you in terms of the work with youth within the schools, but also bringing the community resources into the schools. So it's beyond just education in the classroom. It's also what they need outside of the classroom.
It was the best of both worlds, really, in the sense that as a connector, I think I'm an inherent connector. You know, so I enjoy building relationships and finding opportunities for resources to be maximized. So being able to find programs and services that kids needed. So, you know, I'm addressing the youth piece, which is that my passion,
mm-hmm.
but also being able to ensure that programs that are in the community are made accessible to these youth was just great.
You see yourself as a connector.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk a little bit about how you see yourself playing that role?
Well, I would say in Richmond, the culture of collaboration has really come a long way in the last 10 to 15 years. You'll see so many examples of organizations and individuals working together to make sure that they're achieving their respective missions, but also serving their constituents in the best way possible. And for myself, I can't do it all on my own, whether I'm representing an organization or doing something that's personally important to me. So to be able to look out for individuals and organizations that can complement what I bring to the table, I think is the best way to go about, you know, business or, you know, serving our kids or whatever the case may be. We're finally starting to see organizations say, hey, you know, we can't do everything. Let's focus on the things that we do well and really just, you know, focus in that regard and allow other organizations to come in and complement what we're doing.
And when you talk about collaboration, what do you mean by that? Is it that organizations are sharing resources or working together in a different way? How might collaboration look?
Well, a piece of collaboration definitely includes the sharing of resources. But collaboration goes a little deeper than that. It includes giving up something, a willingness to say, okay, we'll do away with that and allow you to step in and assume responsibility for that. It's really everyone bringing their resources to the table and saying, what can I take? But making sure that I leave something for someone else to take. You know, that's how I look at collaboration. It's everybody put all your cards on the table.
So when you think about collaboration, you said putting all your cards out on the table. That requires a lot of trust.
Trust.
Like, how do you build trust with your partners in the community or trust with the children that you're serving?
It takes time. You know, I think anyone would agree with that. It takes time to build trust. But the best way to build trust is just to deliver. If you say you're going to do something, deliver on that. If you say you're going to show up or you know, produce a certain outcome, deliver that. If someone's in need of assistance, step up and offer some support. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's the only way. People, you can't say what you're going to do and not do it. You have to do it. You know.
Or if you state you're going to do something and maybe you fall a little short.
Right.
Being honest about it.
Right.
Because, you know, that you're right. That is how you build trust, when you are able to just let folks know that you're committed to whatever that shared goal is and that you're going to do what you can to make that happen. And it's true, once in a while, you may not have the available staffing resources, or you may not have whatever it is to be successful. But if you're upfront and you say, hey, it turns out I'm not going to be able to accomplish this task on my own.
Right.
How can you as partners come help me accomplish it?
Right. And, you know, it's also a point of, you know, you're really in a position to trust one another once you've gone through a rough period. You know, if the parties involved are, you know, at end, you know, they're butting heads on something or haven't been able to deliver on something, having those honest conversations about it and being able to work through that, you know, and coming out on the back end of that and saying, hey, you know, well, you know, we got through it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're in this for the long haul.
I'm glad that you brought that up in terms of those rough periods, because I think it's easy to talk about collaboration. It's easy to talk about partnership and imagine doing these great things are going to be great for the community and the children you're serving. But when it really comes down to it, it's hard work, wouldn't you say?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. One of the things about venturing into a collaborative effort is if the issue was easily solved, there would be no need for the collaboration in the first place. Collaborations come about because there's some sort of deep issue that on our own we can't address. So it's going to require some hard conversations. It's going to require a lot of thought and planning.
Well, when you talked about some tough issues and some long-standing issues in the community, and I'm thinking about your role with Peter Paul now. You're now the leader of a nonprofit that is serving children and families and the neighborhoods surrounding the center, really working to build those relationships of trust so people will take advantage of what you have to offer at the center, as well as relationships with the other nonprofits that you're working with to bring in resources that will help your families. Why don't you start by sharing a little bit about Peter Paul Development Center and what your goals are as an organization, why you exist up there in the East End?
Well, the mission has evolved. Peter Paul has been in existence since 1979. It was originally established by a man of the name of John Coleman, who lived, worked, and worshipped in that community. And he established the program as a pretty much just a safe haven, an after-school program for kids. And that's what it was until about 2005 or so, when they began to shift their model to a more academic-based model. And in 2007, a new facility, a wonderful facility, was built.
Where is that facility?
It's at 1708 North 22nd Street, right in the middle of the housing communities up there on Church Hill. And that's the wonderful part about it, and that's what sold me on the job, is once I saw the map and where Peter Paul was located in the midst of that concentrated poverty up on Church Hill, it was just a no-brainer for me. It was just like, that's where I'm supposed to be. And, you know, it's just a wonderful program for kids after school and during the summer, where they're able to come in and build upon the lessons learned in the classrooms. We stretch our kids a lot, you know, so we're not, you know, aiming for passing the SOLs. We want them to blow right past those minimal scores. We want them to enroll in advanced placement classes when they enter middle school and high school. We want them to explore the subject matter in experiential learning opportunities, interactive activities, those types of things. But it's also more than that. We work with senior citizens, you know, and they're a wonderful group in themselves.
What are you doing with seniors?
It's socialization. It's, you know, Bible study. It's arts and crafts. It's taking outings, getting out into the community outside of Church Hill. You know, we're partnering with a couple other organizations coming up this coming school year to offer technology classes and therapeutic exercises and yoga for seniors.
Great.
So that's a great program. And then we also partner with the Central Virginia Food Bank with a couple of food distribution efforts.
Okay.
Serving upwards of 700 individuals a month on Church Hill, you know, families that are in dire need of food.
So you're serving some of the basic human needs in terms of food, but also and the academic needs of the children and some of the socialization needs of the seniors that you're reaching as well.
Right.
And through all of that, you see yourselves as building community?
We're definitely getting to that. Our focus, our flagship program is the academic piece, but by virtue of the fact that we have that facility there, it's a wonderful facility, we want to bring the residents and the families and partnering organizations into the facility to use it as a venue to convene families and residents to, in ways that would build their capacity, bring in programs that would help to promote self-sufficiency.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean by building their capacity?
Well, you know, first and foremost, we want to hear from them. What does success mean to them? And it's all relative. Your success is different than my success. Their success is going to be different from one another. And whatever success means and whatever programs or services or education they may need to experience success for them, we want to bring those opportunities into the building for them.
So you're talking about the parents and the grandparents,
right,
of the children. So Peter Paul started out by serving the children in the community.
Right.
But through that, they have really developed to branch out and reach other generations within the community.
Right. And, you know, I think we can't sit back and not engage the entire community. We're a wonderful resource there. You know, to the extent that we're able to bring in other resources. And again, that could be a lot of just who I am and wanting to bring everybody around me and around Peter Paul. But it's just a community that has so many needs, but they have so many assets. Mm-hmm. Just recently, this past week, a mother of six walked into our building and she was just crying her heart out. And she was at the end of her rope. She had lost her job. She'd been out of work since last August, and she had nowhere else to go, and she just needed food. And so she put her pride aside and came in and just asked for food. And we were able to supply her with bags of groceries to take home for her family. And as I was helping her load the food into her van, I asked her, I said, well, you seem to have a lot on your plate. I said, is there anything else we can do for you? And she said, I just need to talk to somebody. And so I asked her to come back in, and we talked for a good hour. Mm-hmm. And she just cried and just unloaded. But it wasn't until I asked her about her children that she lit up. And, you know, that was what was exciting for her and what was, you know, good for her and what was important to her. And she had a spiritual side to it. So she talked about her faith, and she talked about what she wants for her kids. And so I was able to tell her about the services that Peter Paul provided, and she had no knowledge of it. Mm. So she's since enrolled her children in the program and is looking forward to volunteering. And so, I mean, it was just one of those things that Peter Paul is there for just that reason. There's so many families out there that have similar needs, and if we can meet them or if we can be a connector to resources that they may need, that's our role. That's definitely our role.
Well, if you're just joining us, you're listening to Inspire Indeed on 97.3 LPFM. My name is Elaine Summerfield, and I'm speaking with Damon Jiggetts, who is the Executive Director of Peter Paul Development Center. And we've been talking a little bit about how Damon came into his role as a leader in the nonprofits in this community, and also learning about the services and the difference that Peter Paul is making in the community. So let's talk a little bit about the impact of what Peter Paul is doing. It's clear that you shared that wonderful story about a mom that came in, and you were able to take the time and sit with her and really think about what she needed as a mother and what her children needed to be successful. So that's one, you know, individual measure of success. How else do you look at your measures of success?
Well, you know, we have an enrollment of about 75 children. And we average about 70 kids a day in the facility. We also look at their grades. How are they progressing? Upon enrollment, we assess the children. We test them with a standardized test to determine where they are academically. And we prepare what we call a PPEP, which is Peter Paul Education Plan for each one of the children. And that assists our teachers in making sure that the students are moving forward and addressing those deficiencies if they exist, but also planning for the future. How do we get to, you know, grade level and beyond? So that's been a telling story over the last couple of years, to be able to look back on where they are at the end of a full year of participating in Peter Paul and seeing that, you know, for instance, 40% of the students that enrolled in Peter Paul after a year, they're either at grade level or beyond. Just over the course of a year. We're also seeing smaller percentages of students that have progressed past grade level. So those students that were, you know, over the course of a year, you know, let's say, for instance, if they were in third grade and they were reading on a second grade reading level, we're seeing students at the end of the year approaching fourth grade reading levels, which has been tremendous. And I can attribute that to the plan, for one, that really guides our teachers. And but also the relationships that are in place. Our teachers there are very motivational. They expect so much from those children.
So they set the bar high.
They set the bar very, very high.
And you have a lot of volunteers that come in and build relationships too, right?
Many volunteers from, you know, faith-based institutions, the universities around town, VCU in particular. University of Richmond does a wonderful job. We have a gardening program, so they're getting an education in nutrition and how to prepare foods, you know, those kinds of things. But it's really the relationships that I think, you know, really promote that success with the kids, whether it's the volunteers or our staff. I mean, anytime, I think I was in seventh grade when I dissected a frog. We've got fourth and fifth graders dissecting frogs and analyzing the anatomy of the frogs. You know, if you've got we've got children that are second and third graders talking about, no, they don't want to just graduate high school. They know which universities they're going to. You know, a young lady, one of the first kids I met, she said she wants to go to Georgetown University. A second grader already knows, knows where it's located. You know, a ninth grader talking about he wants to be a biochemical engineer, and he's doing everything that he needs to be doing right now in order to achieve that. That's where I want these kids to be thinking, not just, oh, graduation is the finish line. Graduation is the starting line. That's where we are right now at Peter Paul.
So sharing with them opportunities, what opening their minds to what they may want to do in the future, and also providing them with the, not just the skills and the knowledge to get there, but the hope and faith that they'll be successful in doing it.
That's right. You know, one of the worst tragedies is to see a light bulb go out in a child's eye. is when you see that, when you see that there's no more hope, you know.
And have you seen that in your work in youth development?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And it's so unfortunate. You know, I remember a time in another employment opportunity. It was a young lady said that, you know, she plans on being pregnant by the time she's 14.
Mm.
You know, that's the norm for her. You know, maybe that's the norm for that community. A young man said, you know, Mr. Damon, have you ever been to jail? And I said, no, I've never been to jail. Oh, man, you're whack, man. You know, I'm just not cool because I haven't been to jail. That's what we're fighting against. But what keeps me going is that second grader that says I'm going to Georgetown. Is that ninth grader or 10th grader that says I'm going to be a biochemical engineer. It's that child that in second grade couldn't stay in a seat. But by the time she's in fifth grade, she's a leader in that facility.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I like to see. I've been doing this for so long now that a lot of the kids that I've worked with are now adults, you know, and to run across them from time to time is the most gratifying. Case in point, I coach my son's soccer team, and he's only five. About a year or so ago, a young man introduced himself, and he asked me if I remembered him, and I was like, no, I don't remember you. And he told me who he was, and it was just the greatest thing. I had coached him when he was 12 years old. I had coached him in basketball. And he had come to VCU and graduated, and his son was on the opposite team, the opposing team. And he said he went to VCU because that's where I said I was going to school.
Wow.
And so you just never know.
He
wasn't even one of the kids
impact.
That started on my basketball team. I didn't have a relationship with him. But, you know, I've got a picture wearing my VCU shirt with my team.
Mm-hmm.
And he sent that picture to me. He kept that.
So you don't even know where you're making a difference sometimes.
You have no idea.
You just kind of have to get out there and do what you think is going to make a difference. And sometimes you'll see that ripple, and other times it'll be, geez, years later before you realize that you've made that difference.
That's right.
I guess that's part of what makes it all worthwhile.
Yes.
Because I imagine your work could be discouraging from time to time. You know, we're dealing with the same issues that we've dealt with for decades in our community. Sometimes I'm sure you feel like, what difference is it going to make?
Yes, very discouraging. There's a lady that comes into our building at least once a month to get food. And it's very apparent to me that she's dealing with a lot of issues. There's drug addiction. But I challenged her, you know, in saying that, okay, we can continue to give you food, but you're going to stay in the same lane. You're not going to progress or anything of that nature. And so we had I had to tell her, I'm not going to give you any more food. I want you to come back so we can talk about what else we can do to support you. But in order to get food again, I need to see you here next month. So it's just, you know, just taking the time out and figuring out, you know, what can we do to move these families and these individuals forward? You know, getting them out of the rut that they're stuck in. You know, changing that culture of poverty, you know, in a way that they're not going to continue to perpetuate the cycle that they've been a part of over the last 6 to 7 generations.
It sounds like you have a lot of ways that people could come and volunteer for Peter Paul, isn't that right?
That's right.
Yeah. How could they learn more about how they could get involved?
Well, they could go to our website for one way.
Your website?
PeterPaulDevCenter.org. PeterPaulDevCenter.org.
Okay.
Or they could give us a call. We have a volunteer coordinator, and we can be reached at 780-1195. Or just come on out to the site and see what's going on and see if there's something that strikes your interest. As I mentioned, we have a garden. We're looking for mentors and tutors. We're looking for front desk help. You know, so there's so many ways that you could help out. Mm-hmm. We're located at 1708 North 22nd Street. Up on Church Hill, and we'd love to have anyone that wants to come out.
Great. We've had a great conversation about you as an individual and about Peter Paul Development Center as well. Is there anything else that you'd want the listeners to take away from our conversation?
I guess the only awareness I would offer is, in order for Richmond to move forward, we've got to address those in greatest need. And the East End of Richmond represents that population, those with the greatest need. So in order to, for Richmond to move forward, we've got to build up the residents and the families and the resources in that community. You know, I think that's just from an economic standpoint, but from a social capital standpoint, an educational standpoint, it's just so important that we focus on that huge concentration of poverty mm-hmm. that exists in our in our larger community.
And from what I learned from you earlier, do it with an approach that is engaging residents,
right.
listening to the residents, and seeing them as partners in the work rather than just
to the work.
And contributors rather than just receiving
That's
services.
Right. That's yeah. right. We've got to shift to that. You know, yeah. what are you as a resident bringing to the table? You've got something in you. What is it? Let's pull it out. You know, and there's so many assets, whether it's the mother that I just met last week with the six children, who all she wants to do is serve other people. You know, mm-hmm. finding opportunities for her to do that. Mm-hmm. That's her self-worth. That's her value. Mm-hmm. That's her gift. Or even the lady that I'm just referring to with the drug addictions. She types 60 words a minute. You know, so who knew? You know, what happened in her life that she got away from her career path? It's just trying to find opportunities for people to shine again and, turn that light bulb back on is what I think Peter Paul is all about.
That's a nice way to end this show, because you've definitely found your light and how to keep it shining and serving the community. So thank you so much, Damon, for taking the time out of your day to join me.
Thank you.
My name is Elaine Summerfield, and I'm the host of Inspire Indeed. We've had a conversation today with Damon Jigges, Executive Director of Peter Paul Development Center. Again, if you want to learn more about Peter Paul Development Center, you could go to their website, which is peterpauldevcenter.org. Thanks, everyone, for listening. I hope you've been inspired by something you heard here today, and think about how you can make a difference with your days.